This is Logan Sekulow. We're talking about President Donald Trump's return to Washington, D.C., the first time since 2021.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Sekulow.
This is Logan Sekulow. Welcome to Sekulow. Will Haynes joining me, executive producer in the studio today. We are talking about Donald Trump's return to Washington, D.C. that happened yesterday, meeting with GOP leaders.
That's right.
Making the rounds as he's only, 15-ish days away, I'm just guessing, from the first debate. I mean, somewhere around there. It's got to be.
It's the 27th, yeah, so I think you're 14th.
So yeah, somewhere around there.
2 weeks.
2 weeks away from the first debate, which is pretty wild that we're actually going to have it. It's coming. You see CNN, they got a counter on there. CNN loves a counter. They count up, they count down.
It's their best work, really, yeah. Is the crew in the graphics department that has the counter responsibility.
Because they were during the deliberation, it was the counter up, there was the count down. I think a lot of it started with COVID. You had all of the counters on the side of the screens. They love to count. But this happened. President Trump is in Washington, D.C. Let's play a clip just to start us off talking about the meetings he was having. 21.
This was a great meeting. There's tremendous unity in the Republican Party. We want to see borders. We want to see strong military. We want to see money not wasted all over the world. We don't want to see Russian ships right off the coast of Florida, which is what they are right now. That's unthinkable. We want to see just success for our country.
So making kind of an understated, kind of low-key answer. This obviously comes off the heels also of President Trump appearing on Logan Paul's podcast, Impossible, which is pretty wild thing. I mean, I know for our listeners, they may not be that familiar, but you're talking about someone with just massive amounts of influence on younger people and potentially younger voters. My son, not exactly in the voting range yet, 11 years old, 12 years old, loves Logan Paul. He loves Prime. You've seen Prime, the drink that is owned and created by Logan Paul and his partner KSI. So to have President Trump go on this podcast, clearly making an appeal now, not only to the GOP establishment like here, but also to younger voters who see these little, there's the second TikTok President Trump ever made was him face to face, kind of because Logan Paul's WWE United States champion. They did a little like a stare down with a little laugh break. Second TikTok ever posted by President Trump was this. Clearly someone is there trying to engage a new voter base, and I think it may be working.
Well, and this is something that you hear about every presidential election cycle, is how are you going to engage the, you know, 18 to 24 year old demographic, that younger voting demographic. And you typically hear about like the protesters on campuses, and you think of that being that demographic, the people that are wildly liberal and left leaning and would not ever think about voting for President Donald Trump. However, you see these very strategic smart moves, whether it be the Logan Paul podcast, whether it be him showing up to the UFC fights, and you see each fighter after they win run out of the ring to shake his hand. It's a different strategy than you're used to seeing from a politician, which is what was successful for him in 2016, is that he gets out there, he feels very humanized in these moments. And it appeals to people on a different level. They feel like they can relate to this man, yeah. When in reality, he's a real estate billionaire, but you feel like you can relate to him because he's at the things you care about.
Yeah, and you feel like he enjoys sitting there and talking to someone like a Logan Paul or being at the UFC event. I feel like he enjoys that more than he would on CNN or on Fox News, right. Even on some of these outlets. Because they're more free forward. They can talk. And look, I don't think Logan Paul politically is not really that active in terms of who he supports and doesn't. But he's someone who's having these big conversations, not unlike a Joe Rogan, and has massive influence. I think that's the main thing you have to focus on, is where is the influence? And sure, it's going to help you to have a bunch of 12-year-olds, maybe not. But there's a huge group of his audience who are that first-time voter that just turned 18 to 25. It's pretty wild. So we're going to continue talking about that coming up. Make sure you get involved. If you're watching right now on YouTube or Rumble, hit that like, that subscribe, and get your comment in. Tell me where you're watching from. And as always, send in those clowns. Let's have some fun here today. We're going to continue this discussion also coming up. I want to tell you, though, support the work of the ACLJ. It's an important time for us. Go to aclj.org. Make your donation today. Welcome back to Seculo. I hope you guys are having a good day. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. I always want to focus a good portion of our show on the work the ACLJ attorneys are doing. And right now, Christy Campagnani is joining us live from Las Vegas. Again, a trip I said, I wish I got invited to that one. Live from Las Vegas. A big update going on. I would love for you to kind of give us a breakdown. For those that maybe haven't been watching this show, or maybe they're new. We know a lot of thousands of you have just joined our YouTube channel. Well over 400,000 now. So people maybe not be familiar with this case, but we've been involved in this one for a while, and it involves really a parent who was dealing with the fact that her child, a student at the school, was being forced to read something that was so incredibly vulgar and inappropriate that she thought legal action should take place. We got involved with the ACLJ. Why don't you take it from there?
Yep. So we are representing our client who just has turned 18, but at the time this instance happened, she was only 15 in a theater class here in Las Vegas. And the theater teacher had everybody write monologues and then put them all out on the floor and told the other classmates to go and pick up the other individual's monologues, and they only get to switch out once. So our client picked up her first one. She didn't like it because it was coming from a boy's point of view or something. And so she put it back, and then there was only one left on the floor, and she picked that up, and it was this obscene monologue that went into, you know, sexual content and innuendos and used curse words. And she didn't feel comfortable, but the teacher had already told everyone, hey, you can't switch more than once. And it was the last monologue on the ground, so there was nothing to switch to. So she went ahead and actually performed it on a day when the rest of the class wasn't performing. And it turns out a few months later, her mom found the monologue in her school folder and asked, you know, the school, what in the world, how are you having my child read this? And they responded with, sorry, this is the art school. This is what we do. This is part of the core curriculum. And they completely ignored everything that the mom was concerned about. So she then took it to the school board meeting, where they turned off her mic while she was reading the monologue to the school board to show them how obscene the monologue was. And they told her, you can't use this kind of language in the board meeting.
When you see that clip, and I'm sure a lot of people did just see it during the break. When you see the clip, they go, oh, ma'am, we won't use that kind of language here. And then she does respond very strongly with, well, if you thought it made you uncomfortable, how do you think it would have made my child? And then the ACLJ had to get involved.
Absolutely. So we've been in here for a while. We've survived the motion to dismiss with several of our claims. So that means we now got into discovery. So we're here in Las Vegas doing depositions. We're defending our client this morning from the defense counsel. But then we've also had key personnel from the school district that we're deposing and several students. So we're starting to formulate our trial strategy through their answers. And I think you could say that there's actually a pattern emerging from these depositions, that this wasn't just an isolated event. The curriculum has included other inappropriate content for high school classes.
Christy, and that's the question I have for you is, as you look at this for our audience, you say you're in the discovery phase, you're taking depositions. What does that mean in layman's terms for those that are watching about what we, the ACLJ, are actually doing in Las Vegas this week?
Absolutely. So both our attorneys and the defense attorneys are in a room interviewing the potential witnesses for trial. So it's like a discovery to figure out what will happen during the trial. What will these individuals say? And it is on the record. So they have a duty to tell the truth. And then we will be able to have a transcript so that if we go into trial and they say something different, we can say, well, hold on, you said this during the deposition. You know, now you are lying. And so it is a tool that we use to better defend. And it's also to actually be, you know, on the offensive. And it's also a tool to defend when something comes up that is wrong or inaccurate. And it helps us to formulate our whole strategy going into a trial.
We have that clip. I want to go back. I just want to make sure people got to see it. We actually have the clip of the parent at the hearing talking about this, and I want to make sure that those who are just listening get to hear it, those who are watching get to see this again. This is sort of the origin story, and then the ACLJ gets involved. And again, without your support of the ACLJ, without you coming in, making that donation, again, I'm encouraging you right now, halfway through the month of June, we're a little bit down. We could really use your support. Go to aclj.org. When you hear this, know that the ACLJ is there for parents like this who aren't going to probably, you know, want to go seek out legal help and, you know, get charged for it, some enormous legal fees. That's not what we do here. With the individual support from all of you, whether you're an ACLJ champion, that's someone who gives on a monthly recurring basis, or you decide just to give a one-time donation, that alone is what keeps this free for people like this parent. Take a look.
This will be horrifying for me to read to you, but that will give you perspective on how she must have felt when her teacher required her to memorize this and to act it out in front of her entire class. I don't love you. It's not you. It's just, I don't like your dick or any dick in that case. I cheated, Joe.
I'm sorry.
This is propaganda. Forgive me.
Thank you so much for your... Thank you for your comment. Forgive me. We're not using profanity. Simply, this is a public meeting. I ask for decorum.
If you don't want me to read it to you, what was that like for my 15-year-old daughter to have to memorize pornographic material?
It was almost as if we couldn't have, you know, written it better.
Right.
Like, it doesn't feel real when you watch it. You hear the person say, I'm sorry, we don't use profanity here. And you realize this is what's going on in your public school system. This is what's happening to students around the country. The ACLJ gets involved. You know, you're doing these depositions now, Christy. What comes next for those people who want to keep focusing and following this case? When's trial happen? If that does happen, what does this look like timeline-wise? And what's next for you and your team?
So we still have another round called summary judgment motions. And so what that means is we take all of the evidence that we've compiled through this discovery, and then we go to briefing. And so the defense counsel will argue, look, we've gone through all of the evidence and there's nothing here. These claims are baseless and the court should dismiss this case. Where we'll come and argue, look at all of the evidence proving that there was no pedagogical interest in this monologue, that she was forced to speak against her First Amendment rights, and that, you know, there's enough compelling witnesses that will take the stand that we are definitely going to win in trial. And then it goes through, it could take several months. I mean, I've seen one take up to 9 months where the court sits on it to make that decision. But in the meantime, while the court is making the decision on the summary judgment, we will start continuing to prepare for trial. So the trial more than likely will be sometime in 2025.
And remember, the student was 15 years old when this started, when this incident took place. She is 18 years old now, just turned 18. And the ACLJ is fighting potentially into 2025 and hopefully to win a victory for this student and for her family. But imagine the legal bill if you are trying to fight a case out from a 15-year-old, now 18, into another year. If it weren't for the work of the ACLJ and our hardworking attorneys like Christy and her team that are out in Las Vegas, because we do this at no cost to the family because of the members of the ACLJ.
Obviously, the impact is well beyond this family. We've got 2 minutes here, Christy. Well beyond the family, because some people may go, well, she's 18 now. What does it matter? This is an adult. The impact of these lawsuits, these cases, really reach everyone.
Absolutely. I mean, this will protect the future generations coming into this school and other schools within this whole, within this circuit, even depending on how this goes in court. So I know that our client has really suffered for several years and she's just wanting justice at this point. And her mom's going to continue to fight to the end for that.
All right. Thank you so much. That again is Christy Campagnani, one of our incredible ACLJ attorneys, who again, because of you, because of your support, we're able to afford, send them to Las Vegas, send them to be able to do this for weeks on end, years on end, to make sure your voice, your point of view is heard around the world. Thank you, Christy, for joining us. Hey, in the next segment, I do want to encourage you all to give us a call. We're going to be taking your calls and your comments, but really, I like hearing your voice. Give me a call. We got 3 lines open right now. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I want to see those lines light up right now. And hey, we're heading into this last segment of the broadcast. Obviously, I always like to hear from you. You've heard now what the ACLJ is doing, whether for the individual student and mom who just didn't want her kid to have to be forced to read something that they found incredibly offensive. Most people would find incredibly offensive for a child to have to read. We're able to do this for years. Or you've heard about the whistleblowers and what we're doing to protect you and to fight up against the deep state in the Department of Justice. So again, the individual level and then all the way up to Capitol Hill. We can't do that without your support. I'm asking you right now to make that donation. Again, if you could become an ACLJ champion, that goes a huge way. That goes a really long way. We're doing incredible because 21,000 plus of you that are ACLJ champions. But if you can make a one-time donation right now, help us right this June, get this back on track. We appreciate it. Go to ACLJ.org right now. Phone lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. And hey, I've been back today and I've been following. I was on vacation last week. I've been following what's been going on. It is a crazy time in the world right now, and it's only going to get crazier. As we know, we are just months away from a general election. We are just weeks away now from the first debate, if that is to happen. Pretty crazy. Give us a call. I want to hear from you. Do you think that's going to happen? What do you think this year is going to hold? 1-800-684-3110. And hey, just for the fun of it, you know what? I've seen the clowns going in the comments. We're headed into the last segment. Do one for me. Let's send in the clowns, all right? If you know what that means, you know what it means. Give me a call, 1-800-684-3110. Send in those clowns. Welcome back to Secular. We are going to be taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. I have this article pulled up. It's from Merrick Garland. This was his Washington Post op-ed that said, this was the headline, unfounded attacks on the Justice Department must end. And Will's got some pieces to read. Again, this is coming from Merrick Garland himself deciding, I'm going to take out an article. I'm going to go put in an op-ed because, man, people are just being too mean to me.
Well, and also,
these are unfounded.
Think about this in the context of what we just heard, that within the FBI, under the purview of the Attorney General, you have them asking individuals, yeah, have you heard if your colleague has voiced support for President Trump?
Yeah.
So what we've got here is he says that these are the way that these attacks come in the form of, and some of these are, they come in the form of dangerous falsehoods about, yep, the FBI's law enforcement operations that increase the risk faced by our agents. They come in the form of efforts to bully and intimidate our career public servants by repeatedly and publicly singling them out. They come in the form of false claims that the department is politicizing its work to somehow influence the outcome of an election. Such claims are often made by those who themselves are attempting to politicize the department's work and to influence the outcome of an election. Yeah. We will not be intimidated by these attacks, but it is absurd and dangerous that public servants, many of whom risk their lives every day, are, yeah, being threatened or simply doing their job and adhering to the principles that have long guided the Department of Justice's work.
Yes, and of course one was, they come in the form of conspiracy theories crafted and spread for the purpose of undermining public trust in the judicial process itself. So again, calling a lot of people conspiracy theories, but are these conspiracy theories, Will? Are they conspiracy theories? We have a list of just right, the active things we're involved in right now, whether they're cases or actions that we are doing right now with the Department of Justice that shows, I don't think these are just some right-wing conspiracy theories.
That's right. So we have one. This is the top line on our list of FOIA actions against DOJ and FBI. This is to the FBI because there was the report that they worked with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network within the Department of Treasury, that's called FinCEN, that they were targeting Bible purchases. They were getting from banks a list of people who had purchased Bibles,
yeah,
gone to sporting goods stores, maybe purchased some merchandise that had in the business code MAGA.
Yeah.
They were going and
deep dive.
They were looking at your bank records if you just existed and bought a Bible.
Yeah, exactly. Just bought a Bible. If you went to a retailer and decided on your items list you're going to pick up a Bible, which I have a feeling a lot of us have been, maybe we're all guilty of. Hopefully you are. Hopefully you're guilty of buying a Bible in your lifetime. I think I probably bought just purely for my kids or guests, probably 5 or 6 this year. So I'm probably on some major list. This guy's a Bible extremist.
You have a lot of Bibles.
He's bought dozens of Bibles in
and
his life.
And if you bought the Trump Bible, double list.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's both MAGA and Bible,
oh, no,
same transaction.
Yeah, and Lee Greenwood.
Right.
That's just too many things.
Too many things. Here's another one. This is.
But quit complaining about the conspiracy. Quit making us look bad, DOJ. That's what they keep saying. They go, come on, guys. you know, this is dangerous. You're treating us like we're going after people for their politics or their religion. Maybe they're a traditional Catholic and all of a sudden they're now a radical traditional Catholic.
That goes to the next one that we are currently fighting in court to get the document productions on. This is the FBI targeting of, quote, radical traditionalist Christians. This is where they had actual people placed within Catholic churches.
Uh-huh.
Spy.
Yeah.
And we found out, they said, no, that was just Richmond, Virginia. Don't worry. Then we found out it was all over the country.
Did the FBI agents have to learn Latin? Did they have to
go to the Latin mass?
Or like where they were just like, no, just fake it. Just don't figure it out.
I think they have a script.
Oh, do they? Like a translation?
I don't know if they did or not.
I've never been to a Latin mass. I don't know.
Well, and if it's not enough that they're sending spies into your churches, what about them creating a threat tag against parents, labeling them as potential domestic terrorists? That one, we're on administrative appeal with the FBI, and we're still fighting. The next time they have to reply is, and they give themselves great long dates. Mm. They don't have until December 22nd. To reply to that one, because that's in the administrative process, not in a lawsuit yet. So they're slow rolling this till after the election.
Like one of our comments to just put that they bought 6 Bibles this year. Okay, you're in trouble. You gotta go ACLJ.org/help because you're going to be on a list here because, man, that is too many Bibles. And that Old and New Testament, that's 12. I mean, really, if we're talking about it. That's
12 Bibles?
I mean, it's 12
Bibles. The Holy Bible, one book.
One book. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I feel like they could extrapolate that.
If they wanted to.
They'd be like, and like maybe it's individual books of the Bible, like, oh man.
66 times
so many. Oh. It's too many. Well, I don't like that number.
Different list.
I have a problem with that
All
list.
All right. So then we've got this.
A lot of cash is king comments coming in here. Look, a lot of these stores, though, they don't even know if they accept cash anymore.
They don't. Most of them say Apple Pay or chip. That's it. This one, we've got a new production was just completed. This is we were asking about the FBI's role in squelching the Hunter Biden laptop story. That's obviously in the news a lot lately because of the conviction we just saw yesterday. We're still fighting the FBI to get documents on this. Our next joint status report is July 29th. That's where we'll go before a judge and say, hey, are they complying or not? Yeah. So we've got that. We have the 702 abuse that's within the FISA court system, spying on Americans. We're getting erratic production out of this. They're supposed to be having a timeline, giving us things. Because we went to federal court, the judge lays out an agreed upon timeline. We get erratic production is what our attorneys have told me. And our next joint status review is on August 1st of this year.
But quit being so mean to the Department of Justice. Look, we only got a couple.
We have others as well. You get the gist, though.
Yeah,
they're doing bad things, and yet it's Merrick Garland that's upset that you're making these baseless attacks.
His feelings are hurt. Hey, give us a call. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. 1-800-684-3110. As we head into the second half hour, we're going to take more calls. We're also going to hear from ACLJ attorneys that are currently in Nevada. You know, that's a pretty, you know, when they said, where's our attorneys calling in from? They're like, they're going to be calling in live from Las Vegas. I was like, how come I didn't get sit on that trip? Of all the trips, come on, man. They're in Las Vegas fighting against that Nevada public school. You may have heard about this. We've been talking about it, I think, for over a year now. But it's finally coming to its day about the student that was forced to read the speech that was just completely inappropriate and vulgar. We're going to discuss what the updates with that with Christy Campagnone, one of our attorneys, coming up here in the second half hour. But I do want to encourage you right now, because some of you lose us if you're listening on the radio. Well, you should be watching us. We do full television-style production. Find us online. Find us on YouTube, on Rumble, on ACLJ.org. But if you do lose us or you just have to be done here, I want to encourage you right now, make a donation to the ACLJ. You've heard what we're doing, whether that's fighting against the deep state, fighting for these whistleblowers, and of course, standing up for people of faith around the country, because that is the most important thing the ACLJ does, stand up for people and their beliefs. So whether you think you've been targeted because maybe you bought a Bible this year, the Department of Justice is coming after you, or like this case coming up, this parent who said, my child should not be forced by a teacher to read just horribly vulgar material. If you want to see those fights continue, we can't do it without you, because we don't charge anyone. No clients get charged a dollar. But we need your support. Go to ACLJ.org. Make that donation today. Know that we appreciate it so much, because it goes to keeping not only this show going, keeping the incredible legal resources available to you. All you have to do, make that donation, because when you need the help, you're going to want us to be there as well. If you do need legal help right now, and it's within our scope of what we do here, go to ACLJ.org, ACL.org/help. You fill out a very simple form and you get contacted immediately by one of our ACLJ attorneys that are currently ready to help you. Again, at no cost. ACLJ.org. Support the work. Coming up, second half hour, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. We are going to bounce back a bit and continue our conversation we were having at the beginning of the show about President Trump and his appearance in Washington, D.C. the first time since January of 2021, making his rounds there, meeting with conservatives, meeting with GOP leaders, making some statements. We had some good bites from him. Let's lead with one of those bites, Will.
Yeah, this is with the meeting yesterday afternoon after we were off air with President Trump. He met with GOP leadership, both House and Senate leaders, and they came out of this meeting projecting unity on the path forward about making America great, as the slogan goes. So this is President Trump speaking at the podium on Capitol Hill with Republican lawmakers right after that meeting. So this is Bite 24.
So what's happening to our country is of great concern to the group of people standing alongside of me. And I just wanted to say that we have great unity. We have great common sense. A lot of very smart people in this room and a lot of people that love our country. They love our country beyond just about all else. And the only thing that maybe supersedes it is their family and maybe their faith in certain instances. And that's very nice. But they want this country to be great again. And we're going to make it great again.
Yeah, you're hearing from President Trump here. And I think it is a little bit of a different tone, a little subdued, a little bit. I mean, still Trumpisms all throughout that last statement. I think you're seeing one of two things. I think we have to be honest with it. You're either seeing somebody who's trying to come at it from a different point of view, who said, let's tone this down. Let's bring, when you're not in, you know, fully campaigning, when you're not, you know, on the trail, when you're making statements, bring the mood down, bring the tone down a little bit. I think I saw some of the clips from the Logan Paul interview. I haven't watched it fully yet, but similar. Sure, there's some rabble rousing, as you expect, and they're kind of goofing around and having fun, but this is more the tone. It sounds like this.
Right.
It's either that and, or something you got to watch out, especially heading into the debate. Let's just be honest, you know, age and everything that plays into it, or it's starting to get exhausting. You know, you're starting to see someone hitting a campaign trail very hard and making these statements, doing hours-long podcasts over and over. It's not just Logan Paul. He's done quite a few. He did a bunch with Dr. Phil last week.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of content being created by one man, if you will. And you got to make sure, usually heading into the debate, that you don't mess up your stamina.
Well, as you also bring up, that he's now making the rounds. We knew for 6 weeks he was basically stuck in New York. He couldn't go very far because of the Alvin Bragg case that was pending there, that he had to be there. He was in court every day. So now he kind of has the ability to be moving about the country and campaigning in different ways, that you are seeing a lot more of him. But is it something that he didn't ramp up slowly because he was kind of limited to New York, that you do want to, as a campaign manager or campaign staff, make sure you don't overextend him this early, especially as you mentioned the debate coming up. But I think you hear that tone, and we know that the Biden team is banking on him becoming unhinged and looking crazy on TV, and that's their strategy to win the debate. However, they have such short memory that he can do these type of things. He can bring the tone down, that if that's their gotcha, if their big win is them being like, oh, optically, that's not going to appeal to everyone. Right. That's not a good strategy for the Biden team going into a debate of thinking, hey, we may not look great, but we're going to make sure he looks worse.
Yeah. What do you think? Get your comments in right now. I'd appreciate it. I look forward to really diving in more and watching more of that content that came out of these interviews, because I do think that's where President Trump actually, you can love him or hate him, I think he does much better in these sort of long form one-on-one type situations. I think when he's limited to sound bites, sometimes it can be very easy to pick apart or to misconstrue what he has to say. When you give him actually a bit of a long form It actually comes out pretty interesting. I think a lot of people start to agree with them more. Let me know what you think in the comments as well. And again, as I've said, we are right now heading towards the end. I mean, we're in the middle, but headed towards the end now, back half of the month of June. We're a little bit behind. We really could use your support. Support the work of the ACLJ. We're doing incredible work around the world. You've heard it all this week. All the amazing work the ACLJ is doing. Go back now. Support the work right now. ACLJ.org. We'll be right back with more on Secular.
Welcome back to Secular. We are going directly to Israel with Jeff Balaban, who directs our office in Jerusalem. And Jeff, I wanted to go to you first. People who watched the broadcast saw during the break, there's a lot of talk about tensions ramping up on the border between Israel and Lebanon. This would, of course, be to make it easier for people. It's Hezbollah, of course, that's been on that border for a number of years, but that they're starting to see movements that violate, by the way, UN resolutions already. I mean, that have already kind of crossed the line into what would allow Israel to respond. But as we hear from Israeli leaders, there is that concern that, you know, you're getting hit from all sides, the resource issue, the relationship with the United States, and the fact that even the PR issue of what it looks like again when you've got another group that will be hiding behind, you know, taking you into towns, taking you into cities, taking you where there's kids, and having to fight urban warfare like we saw in the last war with Hezbollah. But what is the feeling right now in Israel? Is that second front about to open?
The feeling is that it's inevitable that there will be a war there. The question is how big it will be, how limited will it be, what the goals are. And also, let's just put this in a little bit of context, Jordan. You know, Lebanon was a Christian country. Hezbollah now controls it. And unlike Gaza, where the overwhelming population supported October 7th and cheered and celebrated the horrors of October 7th, it's fairly clear that certainly most of the Christians in Lebanon aren't interested in having a war with Israel. But because it's really a proxy for Iran, it's controlled by Hezbollah, which is another giant terrorist group. It's another Iran proxy. They really have the control there. So now the problem is you have a population that isn't really even supporting this, that, of course, Iran is driving to war with Israel.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and again, now that we've seen the direct connection between Iran, Hamas, which, again, we know that they had to feel emboldened enough and powerful enough with the current state of the world and what's happened. They look at Ukraine. They look at kind of what the U.S. will do, what the U.S. won't do, what will U.S. leaders say, how will we respond. That they thought, okay, we could even support an attack like October 7th. We might get the criticism for a week or two by the world, but once Israel starts responding, you know, the PR campaign will be, you know, unprecedented against Israel, and we've seen it go to the next level. And if they're looking at that and they're saying, well, we could get involved here in another conflict because it didn't work out so well when Iran tried to launch from Iran. I mean, they launched, you know, their 1,000 missiles and drones, and not one really struck. I mean, so that was not successful. So they've got to go back to this theory of use your proxies. That's much better. And then Israel fights back against the proxies. And it also creates this PR struggle of how you want to frame up who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. And it was totally flipped when it comes to the conflict that began after October 7th in Israel, which had to respond like any sovereign country. I mean, I would imagine, Jeff, at a time when Israel is already, you know, there's a lot of pushback on Israel at the international level, that this even makes it, I mean, you can't really think about that as the leader, but certainly for the people of Israel, you kind of start feeling like you are alone in the world when these atrocities can occur and no one totally has your back.
Well, they used to rely on America, and the current administration has taught them they can't rely certainly on America under this administration. And, you know, when we started, we talked about this, about how the war has been in the south in Gaza. But the truth is that there has been an ongoing confrontation on the Lebanese border since the beginning, since October 7th, immediately Israel had to send its troops up north, and the north has been evacuated. Now they've had to evacuate more. There are 80 to 100,000 people who have not been able to be in their homes because their homes have been under fire throughout this period of time. Meaning all these months, the people up north are living, are homeless because they're being, their homes are under fire. The question is whether Hezbollah will use its, what they estimate to be over 150,000 highly sophisticated targeted missiles. Unlike what Gaza has, where it's much less targeted, these are high, they have far longer range. They can reach everywhere in Israel. They can target things in Israel. It's much more dangerous. And so the consequences of that war are something that Israel always thinks very carefully about. They've always tolerated some limited level of terrorism, but what's happening now is they are elevating it, as you just said, thanks to Iran. They're elevating this into potentially what might look like a full-on war, but what they're trying to do is tweak it so that Israel has to take the first step and says, oh, Israel started this war. And these guys know, and they just saw this, no matter how evil and horrific they do things to Israel, when Israel tries to defend itself, the world will still condemn Israel.
Yeah, I mean, they videotape it. They wear, you know, they wear cameras. They can show it. I mean, it was interesting because when we saw that kind of imagery out of Syria with ISIS, no one thought for a second that we didn't have to do something. And yes, we did see ISIS-inspired attacks, ISIS kind of reaching out using social media attacks in our own country that were horrific. So it brought it home maybe a little bit more. But the fact is, I mean, we've got U.S. hostages still in Israel. We know that there have been U.S. citizens killed by Hamas. That should bring it home just as much. And we've seen the level of violence, the level of cruelty, that this is not soldier versus soldier, military versus military, when it comes to how these groups like Hamas or Hezbollah will act. And it's not even about how they will treat their enemies, which is horrific, what happened on October 7th, but even how they will treat the families in their own communities that they hide behind, the children, the women and children that they hide behind. So Israel has to take that into account at a time when anti-Semitism is probably at its highest level in recent history, where it's so publicly on display without serious consequence. I mean, you've got, again, a couple university professors removed, presence of universities and things like that. But still, these protests continue, and especially at the international level, where Israel has continued to lose support for responding. And I think about a France, I think about a Germany, I think about these major countries. If something like October 7th happened to any one of their cities, I mean, I don't think that the country that was responsible for doing that or the group responsible for doing that would exist at this point, or anyone related to them. I mean, I don't think there'd be any talk about rebuilding or what it looks like or what that group looks like or their governing group in another city. I think it would be wiped out, like ISIS was totally wiped out. They might try to come back, but in a different form. But Jeff, when it comes to Israel, you know, they've got to stop. You've got to halt. And that's where we've gotten that call since a week into the conflict, that there's got to be a ceasefire.
Right. I mean, you know, the Biden administration and the media, of course, but put endless pressure yelling, you can't go into Rafah. You can't go into Rafah. You can't. Why? Because the Biden administration coordinated I'm not saying officially with Hamas, but basically the same exact idea. We're going to keep these Arabs bottled up there. So you're going to have a million people there instead of what we do in every other conflict, which is try to get combatants out of the way. Meanwhile, what actually happened? The media is not talking about this. The IDF, despite Biden, went into Rafah. They claimed there was going to be massive civilian loss. The actual statistics that have come out now is in Rafah, in this horrible warfare, jam-packed with people that America was yelling about, the kill rate of actual terrorists to civilians, it was 10 terrorists for every one civilian. That's 0.1 to 1, you know, non-combatants to combatants, unheard of in history. 0.1 to 1. Usually it's like 5 to 1, 9 to 1, 10 to 1, 20 to 1. 0.1. And that's what happened there. And so Israel's just trying to defend itself. It did the right thing. Thank God it did not let the Biden administration pressure it to stop doing that. But you know, Jordan, it's because Israel is just an avatar for the way Jews are treated. And, you know, what you just talked about, the hostages, Douglas Murray, who's a commentator who talks about this a lot, makes this point. He says, you know, if you put up a picture of a dog that was missing and someone ripped it down, everyone get angry at that person. Like, what kind of person rips down a picture of a missing dog? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in every single city in the world in which these pictures of the Jewish hostages, the babies are hung up, they're being ripped down. Every city in the world outside of Israel, they're being ripped down. And so this is the problem. Israel's being treated as a pariah, not because of what it does, but because it's Jewish. And those who support the Jewish people support Israel. But those who currently run America do not support the Jewish people and are hostile to Israel.
Yeah, and you're seeing that hostility much more public. Yeah, it's public. It's in the policies. It's in what the U.S. isn't doing, and even what the U.S. is doing. It's like, you know, the Biden administration is trying to play almost both sides, which is just, I mean, I think they are trying to play both sides, not almost, by saying, you know, maybe we'll let you have these weapons, and we might let you replenish the Iron Dome, but not if you take this step and if you do this action. I mean, Jeff, I think what you pointed on to something we'll continue to talk about here on the broadcast. I appreciate you, everything you're doing in Jerusalem for us at the ACLJ. And again, an office, folks, that we're able to keep going throughout whatever's happening in Israel because of you and your support for the ACLJ. And again, standing with the Jewish state of Israel, so important for us at the American Center for Law and Justice through those times of peace and through these times when, again, standing with Israel is a bigger statement, even inside the United States of America, which is saying something about the state of our country right now, but it's true. And you have to just be true and be honest. It could even be happening inside your church right now. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to join us. We'll be right back.
Secular. Hey, special guest popping in right now, Tulsi Gabbard, who's on the phone with us right now, obviously a Seculo commentator, which we appreciate. And hey, New York Times bestseller. I got the book right here, For Love of Country. I always like to promote when I can. Tulsi, welcome back to the broadcast. Will, I wanted to pitch to you for this first segment as we head to Tulsi. There has been a lot of talk. I've seen it over the last 24, 48 hours. I think headed towards the Olympics, there was some discussion coming up about sort of terrorism starting to kind of be on the rise. And we know now that there was some plots that were actually, you know, planned out, and they were thwarted, thankfully. But of course, it comes with some big consequences.
That's right. In three different cities, the U.S. Customs and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that's ICE as you normally know them, they busted 8 Tajikistan nationals that had come in through the southern border and were in Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and New York. Yeah. And they were concerned that there was a terror plot imminent, and they were picked up by ICE, and it's obviously concerning.
Yeah, Tulsi, when you hear this news that 8 suspected terrorists were caught, obviously coming from over the border, but they were already over the border. They'd already made these plans, settled in, like Will said, 3 of our biggest cities to plot an attack. What does that make you feel? Someone I know who's serving our country has been involved in the fight against terror for a long time. I just want to get your thoughts.
You know, what it makes me feel is angry, but unfortunately, I can't tell you that I was surprised by this. There's two things that I'd love your viewers and your listeners to focus on as we look at this news. Number one is that none of us should be surprised that we have Islamist terrorists, whether they be from ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, or any of these other Islamist terrorist organizations here in our country. When we have an open border policy, as we do under the Biden-Harris administration, even with his recent executive order action, it is still an open border. This is what we can expect. I've been to the border several times and seen how people are coming across our border, hoping that they get encountered by the Border Patrol so that they can go through, as these 8 from Tajikistan did, get their white piece of paper that says they're claiming asylum, and they go out anywhere in the country where they want to go. This is a major national security risk and threat that faces us all and is a direct consequence of the Biden administration's enabling and supporting the cartels. The second thing is, when we look at the FBI, you know, we heard Director Wray, I think it was last week, pleading Congress for more money for the FBI because he's talking about this heightened domestic terrorist threat. Well, the two are directly linked, but we also need to look at where is the FBI spending their time and resources? Because you and I both know, and you guys are focused on some of these cases, where the FBI is being used to target our fellow Americans, law-abiding citizens who happen to be political opposition against Joe Biden and his administration. You know, we look at the peaceful pro-life protesters. We look at people exercising their right to free speech and freedom of expression, freedom of religion, and yet are being treated like criminals or even domestic terrorists and extremists by the Biden-Harris administration. We need our law enforcement to focus on those Islamist terrorist groups who actually pose a direct security threat to our country and not allow this continued abuse of power by the Biden administration to weaponize these entities and these law enforcement entities against our fellow Americans.
Tulsi, one thing that we didn't hear a lot about for the past few years was ISIS. They were decimated. Airstrikes were very effective against the group. And ever since Joe Biden has been back in office, you're starting to hear more and more about a resurgence in ISIS. And that is what the ties of this group, these eight individuals that were arrested, they are saying they had ties to ISIS. Is it concerning that ISIS may be finding a window here with the weakness of the United States on the global stage?
There is a wide open window, quite frankly. And this is what happens if you remember early on in his presidency, Joe Biden declared an end to the quote unquote war on terror. Well, guess what? The Islamist terrorists, whether it be ISIS, Al-Qaeda, or these other groups, they never stopped waging war against us. They're reconstituting, strategizing, continuing to spread their radical Islamist ideology to bring in more recruits into what is their ultimate goal, which is to establish an Islamist caliphate around the world. That is their goal, and it has been for hundreds of years. Just because Joe Biden declared an end to this war doesn't mean they stopped waging war. They've been doing it this whole time. And this is what has created this wide open window, because Joe Biden and his administration let down their guard, putting us and our security and our safety at greater risk.
You want to hear from, let's hear from Christopher Wray. This is from, I think, what, just a few days ago?
Right. This
just
is
just a few days ago. So this is what Tulsi referred to. We actually have the bites. I want to make sure I get to play it for our audience.
When I sat here last year, I walked through how we were already in a heightened threat environment. And since then, we've seen the threat from foreign terrorists rise to a whole nother level.
Yeah. Tulsi, I have a question. When you hear something like that, then you also know that they were vetted and they were able to make their way up to this level of terror plot. Is there a turning point here where you see an administration actually start taking real action? We know that they, allegedly, like you said, they say they closed the border, whatever that means. Are we too far gone in terms of this administration?
We are very far gone. I hate to say we're too far gone. I think, again, refocusing resources towards this radical Islamist terror threat that we know exists within our country is essential. Hearing Director Wray make these statements, it's a little hard to take him seriously, given he is the same director who has said that Christian nationalists and white supremacists, that these are the greatest domestic threat that we face. When we hear President Biden say that MAGA Republicans are the greatest domestic threat to democracy, their words don't carry much weight when we know that they are weaponizing these public institutions for their own political interests. What he is saying about this increased foreign terrorist threat, Islamist terrorist threat, is true. But it's coming about as a direct result of their policies. You know, this is another reason why this election is so important. We cannot trust these people with our safety or our freedom or our security, because when it comes right down to it, they will put their personal and political interests ahead of the interests of the country. We've got five months to make this change. We've got to make it happen.
Tulsi Gabbard, thank you so much for joining us. Again, her book, For Love of Country, is out. We always appreciate her views and opinions here on the Secular Broadcast. You know, with this show, you get such a wide group of people come on and have commentary. And a lot of times they don't necessarily always agree with each other, but that's what we do here. We provide you guys options. You get to actually hear from people who are there. You have someone like Tulsi, who has obviously served our country in so many different ways and is now able to come on here and have real discussions about what's happening on, whether it's our southern border, whether it's with terrorism, whether what's happening in politics. Again, her book is out. I encourage you to get it. just because it's a good read and it's a good time, especially if you're someone who maybe is on the fence and they don't know politically where they stand right now. She is someone who has had that change. You should go check a look at her book, For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. Thank you, Tulsi, for joining us. Hey, when this show is over, go to ACLJ.org. Look at just the incredible amount of resources that are there. If you need legal help, go to ACLJ.org/help. But none of that exists without your support. And that support can be subscribing to our YouTube channel and commenting, engaging. Or that support can be saying, I'm going to give on a monthly recurring basis, which over 21,000 of you have. Let's get that number even higher. If you can, if you're in the situation where you can, at any level, become an ACLJ champion. All you gotta do is scan that QR code right now, go to ACLJ.org/champions. Check that little box that says make it recurring. You'll get charged, and you can cancel anytime. All right, that's going to do it. We'll talk to you next week.